Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 549 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace, and I have a special treat for you tonight. I have a writer who writes for Marvel Comics who's going to join me to talk about her current series, and we're also going to talk about the character that's sort of near and dear to her heart. Margaret Stoll, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, it was great to meet you at New York Comic Con. And just so you listeners know, Margaret was like super busy and I was super busy. So we thought it would be better and more fun. We'd be able to bring a little bit longer conversation by having her on now. So Margaret, I always like to ask someone when they're on the show for the first time about kind of their history with comics. Did you grow up reading them? How did you come to this wonderful world of comic books?
I had a pretty conventional story as far as a lot of girl creators goes, where I had a bunch of brothers and then I inherited, you know, bits and pieces of their stuff, which is pretty much how I found my way to comics. And then I'm also of the era where we had classic, you know, Batman, Superman, you know, like black and white TV shows. So I grew up in the vintage, you know, the Linda Carter, Wonder Woman era. And that was really my baptism by fire. But then one of my earliest writing jobs in the game industry, which is where I spent the first 16 years of my life as a creator, I worked on the first Spider-Man game for the PlayStation and read my art director's like pristine collection of the full Venom storyline. And that was it for me. I was like completely slain. And then I went on to do Fantastic Four, the very first PlayStation 2 game that came out with the movie. And so then I had like a deep dive into that corner of the galaxy too. So I've kind of had a parallel, like early childhood comics life, and then a deeper, like back-to-back comics experience slamming, kind of specific creators, which is sort of interesting because that's also what happened to me when I started work. I wrote two, Black Widow novels after I had transitioned from games into, writing YA novels, and that was kind of like the 10 years later sort of resurgence of the sort of the comic slam, and I found myself doing the same thing with Captain Marvel, so I really enjoy those kind of deep dives.
Yeah, now I wonder, we're going to talk a little bit more about Captain Marvel in a second, but I have to ask, any of your brothers still comic fans, or, you know, you all kind of grew up reading them, did any of them stick with it, or are you the one that out of all of them that stuck with it?
It's kind of funny. My one of my brothers is actually in charge of the Call of Duty franchise at Activision, and he worked on, his name's Dave Stoll, and he worked on some, like a bunch of their Spider-Man titles after the one I worked on. So like he's had a, you know, he's met a lot of those folks and has had a pretty enduring relationship with Spider-Man and Venom, so he was pretty excited when the Venom movie was out. But no, it's really mostly me.
That's
just
so
kind
cool.
Of funny if you think about it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Carol Danvers. You took over for Kelly Sue. You've been with Carol for a while now. I wonder, can you remember when you first discovered Carol, either from a kid or maybe when you kind of came back to comics, discovering the work that Kelly Sue had done with her?
Yeah, I was a fan of Kelly Sue and I was aware of it. I mean, Kelly Sue is like she's a badass and she's larger than life. So I have so much respect for her, kind of as I do any, particularly female creator who really just sort of like owns their contribution to the genre and the industry. So she was really like, in a lot of ways for me, she was the resurgence of, female superheroes, like plural. That was like I saw Kelly as like the leader of that, and really in the same way female comics creators really getting kind of like a big sort of boost from her. So that was important to me, and I will never forget one of my first, probably I think my first Woman of Marvel panel, which is just like this giant congregational high if you're a woman who works was Marvel, and there were, I think it was like a banner year when there were like 16 or 17 of us on the stage. It was like they were proving how many of us there were that particular year, and her just sort of like leading, you know, this like incredible, you know, sort of like session of, you know, do you want to work in comics, and if you're a girl, and stand up and be recognized, and let's really do this. So like, I mean, honestly, I still wear a non-compliant ring every day, and I'm sort of like her biggest fan. So that was really kind of amazing to follow her in this particular way. And now Kelly Thompson, who's coming on right after me, is like another goddess who we, you know, we had a couple rounds as the only two women in the Marvel Creative Summit. So it's just amazing to share a character with people who I have, you know, just complete respect for on a craft level. So I don't know. I think it's always really hard to transition on and off of a character, but I've just been really lucky in that I share, you know, I've just shared this one particular gig with just some of the greats.
Yeah, I think the thing that I love about Kelly Sue is she tells a story that she wants to tell, and she's unapologetic about it, whether that be, you know, her own Bitch Planet title at Image, mm-hmm. or whether it be working on Captain Marvel. And it's never for her a point where it's like, okay, I'm going to tell this female centric, really good female centric story, or I'm a woman creator telling the story. She's just telling a story, you know,
yeah.
And forget all the BS, you know, she's just telling the story that she wants to tell. And it's great to be representative of that. And I think the message that she sends, and really the message of the Women of Marvel panel, is that it's great to celebrate that sisterhood, but also remember that it doesn't make you any less. You've got to think of it as just, this is your group, this is your sisterhood that you can pull strength from, but don't let anybody tell you that you're any less than you are.
Yeah, no, I actually think that's, I mean, for someone who's not a girl, that's a really accurate point. And I think that partly, that's sort of her power, and that's kind of the Bitch Planet message too, right? Is about like, there's just so much stuff with female likability that we have in terms of our characters and in terms of our own careers. And it's just not something, I mean, I'm sure she deals with it because we all do, but she is just so fearless in her sort of kind of interrogation of why, you know, women are asked, and women creators and women creations are sort of held within a certain regard. So, I mean, honestly, she's just a giant, she's a powerhouse and a giant role model. And I actually think what a great association for kind of a resurgence of Carol Danvers. And I wrote about this. I mean, I come from a slightly, I don't know Kelly's particular background, but my own, you know, my own context is that I came from, sort of a conservative family background. And so for me, I had a much more of like a Carol Danvers-like journey from sort of side character to protagonist of my own life. So I completely relate to sort of like the overall migration of Carol from a side character and sort of like capturing her own name and her own understanding of her own powers and her own character. Like, I think a lot of times that's what it's like to be a female creator, or certainly a female in the comics, mainstream comics or game industry. So I thought it was really like an interesting experience, like for me personally.
Yeah, that's really cool to hear that you're kind of pathway into relating to Carol mirrors your own life so much. Mm-hmm. That's got to give you a kind of a unique insight into the character.
It mostly gives me a lot of patience with her and a lot of sympathy. And I think sometimes it's disappointing for any comics fan, but certainly for girl comics fans, that are like, if our character doesn't have the neat hero's journey that, you know, like Peter Parker has, or, you know, and I wrote about this actually in the creator's letter in the back of my first issue of Life of Captain Marvel, which is my last miniseries that's going to sort of wrap up my run on Captain Marvel and really sort of re-anchors her origin story before the movie in the MCU comes out. And it's just true. Like, women like everyone has a hero's journey and everyone's hero's journey looks different. But particularly if you are a female creator, a lot of it is about like coming to see yourself as a hero. And it's not something we're necessarily trained to do from birth in the same way that a lot of the stories and the heroes and the action figures that boys inherit, you know, like teach them. And I'm still waiting. I tell this to people all the time for my, you know, where's my girl Dumbledore? Where's my girl, you know, where's my girl Sage and my Merlin and my, you know, Yoda? And like, these are all the things that I want. Cause I always wanted to be the smart one. Right.
Right.
So like, it's interesting, but I have realized that part of my whole journey was kind of like owning that I was still here and owning that I was a creator and surviving the, like, you know, weekly death threats or the hate or the, you know, the social justice warrior allegations or the comics gate or the gamers gate or whatever it is. Like, sometimes it's actually about learning how to root for yourself. And that's just not a message that women get very often. So like, I have been sort of deeply struck by kind of all the personal sides of this journey for me. And that was one of the reasons I really sort of tried to lay this all out in the, you know, the letter from the creator in the back of that first issue, because I think it really is something worth saying over and over to girls that, like, however you got here, you get to be here, and you can own that space and you can defend that space and you have every right to be a hero and you have as much right to believe in yourself as anyone else does. So that's my PSA.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And it, you know, like, I read a lot of comics, and I have to admit that I had not read Captain, I haven't been reading much of Marvel at all over the past, you know, few years. And when I was like, okay, I need to read Captain Marvel. You know, I've heard it's so good. So I read Kelly Sue's run, and then I hadn't read your run, but I started with Life Of, and I read the first three issues, and then I'm like, oh, this is so good. I've got to go back and read all of Margaret's previous stuff. Read it all in the course of a day. and what I was struck with, both with the way Kelly Sue was telling the story and the way you're telling the story, and so a lot of what you're saying here makes perfect sense to me, it's that, you know, a lot of times women in a position of authority or a hero like Carol, Captain Marvel, she's got to be, for whatever reason, stronger than a guy, right? Mm-hmm. She's got to be just as strong, if not stronger, than the male hero. And they're not allowed to show vulnerability, because then it's weakness and it's an excuse. Oh, it's because she's a girl. And so I think right from the start of your run, you really continued what Kelly Sue had done and shown Carol as a strong character, but so strong that you're able to show some of the flaws. But it's always a balance, right? In being strong, but showing that you can also be vulnerable, because unfortunately there are those critics that are going to say, oh, it's because she's a girl, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting. I really enjoy Brian Bendis, and I spent a bunch of time with him and, you know, at Marvel Things and at those summits. And he's really close with Kelly. They're neighbors and friends in Portland. And I inherited Kelly Sue's, well, really, I inherited Carol after, you know, Brian had really put her through the ringer during, you know, some Civil War days. And it was really interesting to inherit a character at sort of her low point in terms of likability and unpopularity in terms of like decisions that she'd made. And it was really interesting because Brian is so sort of committed to the character, but also super liberal and super interested in Carol just sort of as a human and not at all making these decisions based on like, you know, what a bunch of male readers were going to say, or really what a bunch of female readers were going to say. Like, he just sort of looks at, you know, the story and tells it and affords her all the dimensions that any human or any character would have. And it was just really interesting to see sort of like all the like digging out of this hole that I had to do with Carol that really had nothing to do with with anything other than decisions that he made, that you would make about like a human who you decided to see what happened as they went down this path. You know what I mean? But like, girl decisions are held in a different regard. And it was really interesting seeing all the fallout that came from that. So, I didn't intentionally, I definitely was defensive for her because I wanted the conversation to change and to like finally move on to being like about anything that was actually happening to her during my run, as opposed to back before I'd, you know, gotten her. But it was really like this profound period when almost the first year of my run, I had to just sort of let her log some new experiences and take her off to space and let her prove herself and develop her own relationships kind of like over again. Because, you know, there are sort of certain things you can't go up against and certain sort of understandings of how female heroes are supposed to operate, you just can't rattle. So I feel like eventually she got let out of the penalty box. And really, by the time we hit Life of Captain Marvel, she was kind of back on her own and like, you know, able to sort of do what she wanted and choose what she wanted and kind of like take her readers down the story she wanted to tell instead of sort of defending against the stories that had been told about her, if that makes a kind of sense. But I thought it was super interesting. And the only person I'd ever seen get into something like that was also Nick Spencer, who made a super controversial story arc about, as we all know, Captain America, which was like a totally interesting and defensible narrative position. Like, no matter how you feel about it politically, I absolutely see how a creator would commit to that. But just from the perspective of what makes a super interesting, you know, journey towards or away from the heroic. And I absolutely see the temptation with characters who are so perfect a lot of the time, or so strong, or so, you know, like, so sort of, you know, conflicted with the sort of Superman issues of too perfect or too strong or less limits to what they can do. So it was really interesting also watch him struggle with that, the kind of like likability tax that gets levied against a hero as beloved and as sort of tied to American ideology as Captain America. So I definitely like, I feel that Carol and Cap were both really like working off that hero tax for a while.
Yeah, I agree. Carol's really the kind of the all-American girl, which again what makes it so interesting, that both the choices she made in Civil War II, which weren't, that's the thing that people got so upset. I'm like, these aren't personal. This is what she believes is best for people, you know, for survival, for, you know, the human race, and people don't always see it that way. And sometimes, I mean, I've been reading for comics for a long time, and I kind of have to chuckle when I see people get so upset. In a way, it's great that fans have that much passion, that they care that much. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's comics. Just if you don't like a storyline, just wait a few months and the next writer's going to come on and, you know, everything could change. You know,
I know. That was what was so amazing in particular about the Cap one. I was like, have you ever read a comic? Can you see how this is going to go down? Like, what are you imagining? But I know, like, I have really good friends who are that furious. You know, it is really like, it's sort of fascinating. And I guess and maybe that's like the great thing about comics that it, as you're saying, that it can really still stir that up in folks, but definitely that was amazing to watch. And it was amazing to watch both of those things exploding kind of like within a short, span of each other. While Nick and I were both in the room, just sort of watching those things blow up. And Brian was in the room too, like, you know, who had sort of put Carol in that penalty box. So we were all just sort of staring at these things and watching them unfold while, you know, meanwhile, like Trump unexpectedly was rising in the background and all this stuff, you know, like it was just like such a particular time to be dealing with these like huge issues about like, you know, democracy and choice and like, total leaders rising and all these things. Like it was a wild couple of years in there.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing when they kill somebody, it's like, they're going to come back. Don't worry. But talking about that particular moment in time with all those things happening, I'm always really a big believer in how important our fiction is in kind of relating what a particular society or culture is at a particular time. I feel like that's a lot of the worth in these stories that we create. Like, if you want to know about a particular time period or of culture in human history, like, go look at the stories that they were creating, and it gives you such an outlook on what the world was like at that time, right? It's like it's a specific window. And so I feel like that's exactly what the zeitgeist was at that time with, as you said, you know, the politics of Trump and the right and everything. And it's so fascinating. And I think that as time goes by, we'll look back on it, and it'll become even more interesting to us to look at it through that lens of history.
Yeah, no, it's super fascinating. And I think it goes without saying that, like, it's very rare, like, you don't know all of those books take so long to plan that you don't necessarily know what the reality especially the political reality is going to be in a given year. Right. So it's just sometimes those things just like blow up and ignite in your face in a way that you never can imagine. And that's sort of the amazing thing about Marvel, in particular, in terms of the world outside your window, which they really do. I mean, it's a thing they say all the time, and it's a thing they live by. And this is also like the flip side of that is, you know, the world outside your window can burn you also. And that's kind of like a thing we've all seen, but it certainly makes it super relevant and super interesting, whether you're kind of in that room or not, or just watching. You know, it's been wild.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's talk a little bit more specifically about your current series, Life of Captain Marvel. What was the impetus of doing the story that's so grounded in Carol's childhood? Is it the story that you always wanted to tell about her, or did it just seem like the natural progression of where you were with the character?
Well, I once said this about Natasha Romanoff, that it took us a long time to get to know each other, and there was sort of this dance we did where I kind of circled her for a long time until that character would really like talk to me, you know, let me in her head in a certain way so that I could write from her perspective, which is a thing I had to do in those novels. And I had a fairly similar experience with Carol. So maybe it's just once someone has banked more than, you know, 50 years or whatever, you are like, there's a certain way you have to find, your way to their voice or their voice with you. And Carol is a tough nut to crack. I mean, I think for the same reason that Brian wrote her the way he did for Civil War. I mean, she has like this military background. She will like stick the landing. She will tough it out. She will drag you out of combat on her back. Like she is a rugger. And I totally understand that. And I think that can like work for you, or can also, you know, work against you. And one of the things I love about Carol is the like force of nature that she is. She is definitely her own worst enemy in all kinds of ways. And I relate to that myself. And I think anyone with a really big personality is always, you know, your strengths and your weaknesses are tied up together. And I think that's just a much more interesting and realistic story to tell. And I have really appreciated that. By the time I found my way to Carol and sort of the truth of her voice for me, it was a really messed up, you know, good and bad and right and wrong, and like a lot of missteps and a lot of powerful steps forward. But you like never doubted her good intentions, or I never did. And that was sort of the key for me. When I'm teaching writing, which I do a bunch to kids, in a bunch of nonprofit capacities, mostly in the summer, or, you know, in volunteer capacities, I'm always trying to sort of reverse what they learn in school and say, like, you know, you spend a lot of time trying to get the right answer, but in writing, you spend a lot of time trying to get the wrong answer. And if you're really trying to get to know a character, like, the stuff you are an expert in you know, that's like your failings and your, you know, your messes and the stuff that makes you human and the stuff that's going to make a character human are all your vulnerabilities. And your character basically succeeds. The success of your character often is like exactly equal to the degree to which you can be vulnerable yourself and get your character to be vulnerable on the page. So it's sort of like, it's sort of, you know, it's counterintuitive, but to write heroes really well, you've just got to be able to sort of write against their heroic natures. You know what I mean? You've got to like, you've really got to anchor it in their human side. And I love banter and I love like funny heroes. I love Carol's funny side. She's really funny. I love Tony Stark and Carol. They're hilarious together. You know, my friend Steve Wacker at Marvel, who was one of the, was actually Kelly Sue's editor during the revamp of Carol, always says that I'm like, I am like Tony Stark. I can barely get my own sentences out. But like, in reality, for Carol, it was, for Life of Captain Marvel, she broke open when I just let her be super real and emotional. So this is not the story I've always wanted to tell, but it was a story Carol needed to tell. And everyone at Marvel was super supportive. Joe Quesada kind of led the charge on this with Sana Amanet, who's my boss, sort of always been my editor on everything. And Sarah Brunstad, Mark Basso, like basically every editor I'd had. And then, let's see, CB, Axel started it, CB finished it. Honestly, like Tom Brevoort, everyone was there. And it began with this like Carol Summit where everyone just sort of dug out their own family stories and kind of like all the family taxes we'd paid and all the sort of emotional, you know, the great sort of like trying to sort out your own relationship to your family, because we all realized an origin story is two things, right? It's kind of a mystery, but it's also a family story. So it's like the mystery of your origins, literally in a return to your family. So we started working with that premise and everyone just kind of like, we just had these hours and hours of everyone just sort of kind of digging into like what the messes we all had in our own families had in common. And I actually got to know those, all of the, everyone in the room pretty like kind of amazingly well. And it all sort of changed the way we saw each other, but also this character. And then as soon as we got through these 2 days, like, I absolutely knew what to do. Like it just like, then we were in my wheelhouse and I just like, I could feel that it was special and I could feel how it was going to write itself. And the whole thing just sort of, took flight. And, I set it in a really small town that I know very, very well. Because I wanted the town to have, to be a character and to have like a role in the story. And I wanted the return, Carol's return home to be sort of vivid. And for us to be able to kind of feel by proxy, how many memories, is the return to a scene of a crime. And, that is sort of what unlocked kind of all these sort of other ways that Carol had felt before. And that sort of allowed us to kind of experience more of her family story directly, than we had previously. And Sana is really interesting because she pointed out that she had been looking through, trying to figure out what we should all be doing with Carol's backstory. And she realized how few panels there actually even were about her family. And so like we knew it was sort of the thing that really had to happen. So anyway, it was more like the thing the character most needed to happen. And it really made sense of Carol's overall arc for all of us in a way that it never had, not even since Kelly. You know, it was just sort of like it was sort of the family side of it that we'd only seen really tiniest sort of bits of.
Yeah, well, like I said, it got me off the bench because I was like, this is looks really interesting. I had flipped through the first issue. I was like, this looks really interesting. And then, yeah, the first three hooked me in and I went back. And it's really interesting to hear the kind of the origin of it and everybody there kind of sharing their stories, because as many writers as I've had on the show over the years, nobody's ever kind of put it the way that you put it about telling aspiring writers, like when you get into the mess, when you get into the vulnerabilities, that's where the character can grow, because it mirrors real life, right? Like we don't learn lessons from when we make the right decisions. We learn lessons from when we make the wrong decisions. So it makes total sense for a character to be fully realized in fiction, to have them take the same kind of journey and make the same kind of mistakes and kind of learn, right?
I know. Isn't that kind of amazing? I speak at schools a bunch of the time, and there are all these kids. And when someone goes and speaks to children, it's weird because you would think they would sort of relate to the children more. But a lot of times the instinct is to like hold yourself up and be an example. And it's just hilarious because you're just sort of widening that gap and making it seem more impossible. And it's exactly the same thing with a reader, where you're like, you don't want to be sort of less relatable and you don't want to be invulnerable, and you have to sort of, you know, when you're writing, you're looking for cracks in the characters that you can kind of get in and see what's really going on. And really they're looking for cracks in you in the same way. And that's sort of where all the interesting stuff, is. And definitely, like, I mean, I can't relate to, my father was never, you know, abusive in the way that Carol's father was, but I leveraged all kinds of family stories in this cycle of just like, you know, extended family, my family, like family is so hard for so many people. But I also definitely relate to this fundamental idea of feeling strong and feeling like you have a gift and desperately wanting to be yourself and yet still be understand like where you came from and kind of make sense of how you relate back to these people, which in some ways don't seem anything like you, and yet they made you, and sort of the like loneliness or the isolation that comes from that, and your need to figure it all out and find a way to be yourself, but still be like from where you're from. Like those are sort of like recurring themes in my life. And it was so interesting to get to kind of like see how that all mapped so perfectly, you know, right with things Carol was working through. And she would come to realizations and I would be like, oh my God, that's my realization. and I would just like be figuring things out with her on the page. So it was like a very bizarre, event, but we've all worked on it so hard. And I have to give a huge shout out to Carlos Pacheco and Marguerite Sauvage, because the art is just incredible. And the structure of the flashbacks, I mean, the sort of vintage look, and even the coloring that I don't know how to pronounce his name, but Marcio Menez did. I mean, just the whole, like the look is so distinctive for all five of these issues. And I think you're going to really kind of, you're going to like tomorrow's number four also. So I couldn't be sort of more pleased with how the whole thing is sort of unfolded.
Yeah, art-wise, I was struck right from the beginning how similar Carlos and Marguerite are in their sense of storytelling, you know, visually, and the transitions from panel to panel are very similar. So it gives it, even though it's two different artists, it gives it a very smooth flow. That's not, because sometimes you get multiple artists on a book, it can be a little jarring. This isn't that at all. And then you're right, the color work on it, especially for the flashback scenes, is excellent. So I think the entire creative team is doing an incredible incredible job. And I think when it's all said and done, this is going to be like one of those, like, you know, 10, 15 years from now, people say, okay, I want to get into Captain Marvel. This is where you're going to start. Like, everyone's going to point to this and say, this is where you start. And I always believe that special projects like that grow out of so many people contributing and catching lightning in a bottle, because everybody sets out to make the best comic they can. But every once in a while, you really catch on to something magical. And I have to believe that a lot of that had to do with so many people sharing their own experiences and really putting so much into this to tell the story of Carol and make it relatable, right?
No, I think that there are some scenarios when everybody is, you know, the too many cooks in the kitchen, you know, creative nightmare scenario. And I think that situation mostly happens when people are defensive and they like don't want to collaborate. But like, we were in this remarkable situation where I knew I was with people who knew Carol as well or better than I did. And the degree to which everybody wanted to collaborate and wanted to just like, it was that spirit of like, kind of emotional collaboration, I suppose. Like, no one was telling me the craft, but they were just so open with kind of like what would make it meaningful for them. And that I just had this like kind of richness of perspective and material and sort of like, I don't know, like it was just one of those wholly collaborative rooms that really is like particularly meaningful. And I don't know if this is for all creators or just for me as a creator, but it is my most favorite thing. Like, I always say that in video games, one of the reasons that I've returned to working at Bungie now, which is where I work, I actually commute up to live in Seattle during the week. I live in LA on the weekend, is because I miss the like big collaboration of a video game, because it's a bunch of people and everybody is like stone soup, you know, they're putting in their, I have a carrot, you have a potato, I have an onion. And that sort of feeling of like getting a 50-pound stone kite to fly. I love that. Like, it's my favorite thing in the world. And it's hard to find as a writer. You know, I was, as a novelist, I spent the last 10 years, if I wasn't on tour, I was, you know, in my living room writing by myself with my giant earphones on. So, like I came looking for that. I was so excited to find it at Marvel. I found it in those creator summits, particularly in this last run. And I just have like, it's the sort of the jam session itself is the most valuable part. And the sort of the story that can really sing is more like the thing that happens after this sort of incredible jam. You know what I'm saying? It's like the artifact you get from all those kind of souls relating. And that was super cool.
Yeah. And I really feel like oftentimes I hear writers say that, you know, even working in comics, you collaborate with your artist, but so many times it's you alone in a room coming up with story. Yeah. So to hear that this quintessential story of Carol has sprung from the mind of so many, you know, providing you with kind of ideas, and then you've kind of cultivated everybody's, you know, additions to the story and come out with this incredible story. It's really amazing.
It's great. I'm glad it's working for you too. And it's funny because it's kind of lingered. Like, Kelly has been telling me, Kelly Thompson, what she, you know, like where they're headed. And I've been like, she's like, what do you think about this? And I've been like, oh, this would definitely work. You know, like that sort of like, we haven't had that sort of like siloed, my take on your character, right. My take on your character. And that's really kind of lovely too. Because it also can be like that, you know, I keep saying this to Carol Core, and the Carol's fans are like the most amazing, loving, inclusive fandom. It's kind of ridiculous, which is good because it's generally so hard to be a woman in comics. You would not survive if you didn't have right. like some massive support system like that. But, there really is this sense that, it's bigger than you. This journey's bigger than you. It means a lot to a lot of people, and like to even be able to share that whole day that Captain Marvel's movie trailer came out with the Carol Corr and these like wildly hysterical fans and, you know, in Brazil and Spain and everywhere, just like freaking out. That was in and of itself, just like a highlight, you know, like a day I will just always remember, just that level of just energy, really. And so I don't know, like, I'm happy for Kelly's written, has written Carol before earlier with Kelly Sue. And I mean, I'm really happy to have her back and working on this. And I have other stuff to do even at Marvel. So it's all super, you know, kind of happy at the moment.
All right. Well, I have to ask you one little question about Carol's origin and that we're seeing some new clues here. But first I have to tell you kind of my own personal experience. So, as you know, I put out far too many podcasts for one person. So I don't really watch much of the movie or TV show stuff because I always hear a little voice in the back of my head. And this is totally on me. I do it to myself. If I'm watching a movie or a show, I think to myself, you should be reading comics. So I actually haven't even, I stopped watching the Marvel movies. The last one I saw was, I think, Iron Man 2. So I haven't even seen the Avengers or anything that's come after that. But I saw the Captain Marvel trailer and I was like, okay, I'm going to go see this the first day it comes out. Like, that's how important it is to me and how much the trailer spoke to me. And the other thing I did was immediately, as soon as I got home from my day job, I got my 7-year-old daughter and I'm like, okay, you have to watch this with me.
Yeah. Right? It's that sort of little girl superhero moment of the like sort of getting back up moment. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, so we're gonna go see it on the opening day. But the funniest part was, like, as soon as the trailer finished, she says, "Why did she punch that grandma?"
Yeah,
I know. Spoken like a true 7-year-old. But
yeah, no, I mean, definitely, that's there is a lot of backstory with Captain Marvel, so it'll be really interesting to see everyone's take on, you know, where she comes from.
Yeah, and we saw in issue 3 of Life of Captain Marvel that maybe there is some things in the past of Carol's past that we weren't sure about, or we weren't aware of. Yeah. You know, we have this idea of what her origin is. And it seems like maybe you're going to be adding to that origin. I don't want to spoil because I want everyone to go out there and you know, pick it up and read it for yourself. But I love that idea of not necessarily changing the origin, yeah, but just adding
that
to
was,
it.
So, that was definitely the goal, was the, you know, the dance between the raindrops, but really connecting the raindrops. We were telling another side of the story. And that is just sort of, it's not... it's adding. It's exactly that. It's parts that you might not have seen. And so as a result, it's sort of a different angle on the whole thing that you might not have expected. But we were pretty careful about that and pretty respectful, or that was the intent. So I'll be curious to see what you think when you've seen the series the way through. But it's, you know, so far so good. I was so, there's a particular sort of big spoilery issue 3, and I was so aware of when that was coming out and what that was going to do to a bunch of people that I basically said to the fandom, look, if you need to talk about this, I'm begging you, don't talk about it online, because you're going to get it earlier. You know, it's like 9:00 the night before it comes out the next day. Yeah. I'm on Pacific, you know, standard time. And I was like, just talk to me. I'll unlock my direct messages. Just talk to me. And it's really interesting because, again, Comicsgate and Gamergate being by far the worst one, I keep my DMs locked just because of the threats and things. So it was an interesting experience for me because I opened them up and basically just had 48 hours of love letters of just people, you know, shocked or struck by something and then just wanting to talk. So it was like, you know, people were remarkably well behaved. Nothing was spoiled until it was already kind of out there, you know, online and in sort of the bigger reviews. And then I finally, Sana was like, just do it. It's, you can talk about it. It's out. And I told sort of the fandom, you know, the like big bloggers that they could they could talk about it, and they really literally waited to be told they could do it, and then it was just kind of great. So there really was this sort of amazingly positive reception of sort of the most new stuff that they were, you know, that they were processing, and there was no pushback. Instead, it was just sort of it was just collaborative and community, and that's really what the Carolcore as a fandom has been like for a long time. So I'm excited they're getting to have kind of their day in the sun with the movie. I hope it all, you know, keeps being that positive for them.
Yeah, well, I think it's a perfect time to be additive, right? Because what that's going to do is when the movie comes out, you're going to have all these, you know, fans that hopefully will come over to pick up some reading material about Captain Marvel. You know, maybe they'll finally transition. I know it doesn't always happen with the movie, but being that your series, The Life of Captain Marvel, will be finished by that time, it's great that they can come in. They can probably see some things where you're being additive that line up with things that happen in the movie, and they feel like they're a part of it from the beginning, right? Like they're not that far behind. It's such a kind of a barrier to entry sometimes of why people don't come over, because they feel like, well, I need to go all the way back. Well, no, you only need to go and read this Life of Captain Marvel. It's the quintessential story of Carol. It sums up who she is. So really pulling for that and more members of the Carol Corps, if you will.
Yeah. I also think I'm looking forward to Kelly's run, Kelly Thompson, because she is like such a classic, you know, like comic books for the sake of comic books creator. And she, like, I think she will give, like, I hope they do come to life, just because I'm so proud of that and see that for the origin. But I do think moving forward, Kelly is going to give them like a very like a, you want a girl hero, here's a girl hero, and let's go classic with it. That's what I'm expecting anyway, based on what I know about Kelly in general. So I'm definitely part of the core, the Carol core myself, so I'm super looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. So I really want to thank you, Margaret, for taking the time to chat with me. It's been a lot of fun, and you know, just hearing about the kind of the impetus of the series Life of Captain Marvel was amazing. Is there anything else that you want to share with our listeners?
No, I appreciate their listening. I appreciate everyone reading, and I appreciate the general positivity online. I think that I've been lucky because people have taken a lot of time to like shout out to me when they do like something, and I think you can never underestimate what a negative place the interwebs can be for girl creators. So I would encourage everyone, if you ever like anything you see anyone do online, and I think that's true of boy creators too, you should just always let people know the good stuff, because life is too short, man, and it is hard to make stuff up. That's my PSA for a kinder, gentler planet. How about that?
Yeah, and I know you're always like to encourage young writers who are looking for advice and kind of mentor them and you know, point them in the right direction. So, is there any way in particular if somebody wants to chat?
Yeah,
online
for sure. Twitter is the easy way to find me. Instagram and mstoll.com. No, I'm there too on Tumblr, but mstoll on Twitter and Margaret_Stoll on Tumblr, and I am pretty easy to find, and don't be afraid to reach out. I am right here, and thank you so much. And Jace, it was super fun, and I expect to talk to you again someday.
Yeah, you know, the door is always open.
Okay.
I'd love to have you back on. And listeners, okay, I'll put links to Margaret's social media in the show notes, so you can go there and find out where to follow
her.
So have a great night, Margaret. Best of luck with the series, and I can't wait to see how it all turns out.
Thanks so much.
You bet.
Talk to you later.
Take care.
Bye.
Well, I hope you all enjoyed that really fun chat with Margaret Stoll. Thanks again to her for joining. I particularly loved hearing the story about everybody in the room kind of opening up and telling stories of their family to give Margaret a lot of fertile ideas and things to draw from to tell the story of Carol and her, the things that she went through in her childhood. That was really amazing. And it's no surprise with so many great, talented creators offering up ideas and Margaret kind of picking and choosing and steering the ship that this, series of the life of Captain Marvel has turned out so special. So, as always, I want to thank everybody for joining. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, be sure and check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.